Hey, so next up in the narrative, after the guy gave him the signal that this is, where is the academy? So Rishula observes that there are guards, barring entry to the academy. There's a set of guards on the outside of the door, not letting anyone in. And there's guards on the inside of the door, not letting anyone out, anyone of the academy leave. And the policy of the elders of Athens was that, to make sure that the guards are doing their job properly, right, was if they sprinkled, as Rashi explains, they sprinkled some type of dust or some type of, on the portal, that the guards were guarding, a set of guards on the outside of the portal, a set of guards on the inside of the portal, like some dust or something like that, that if they would see footprints of someone leaving, so they would kill the inner watchman for having let someone out. And if they would see footprints of someone going in, they would kill the outer watchman for letting someone enter. All right. So, Rabbi Shua outsmarts them. It seems, as Rashi explains, the policy was that the guards would only actually kill someone if he either totally entered or totally left. Right? But if he just made it to the portal, the guards wouldn't kill him, but the guards would get killed by the elders of Athens for being negligent to the point that a guy could make it to the middle of the portal. Right? So, what he did was he flipped around one of his sandals. Right? He wore one of his sandals backwards, and he got, he pushed past the guards, managed to get to the portal, and it looked like there was a footstep in and a footstep out, because, one shoe was, facing inwards in the direction of Yeshua Ben Chananya was facing. One was wearing backwards, so it was like, looked like someone walked out. One person walked in, one person walked out. Of course, he didn't make it all the way in, so he just threw him away. They just shooed him away. But then the elders of Athens see, both sets of guards were negligent, so they eliminated the two sets of guards. The ones on the outside, one on the inside. And of course, once they eliminated the guards, Rishua Ben Chananya was able to just walk in, freely. And no guards to stop him, not on the inside, not on the outside. And he says to them, straight asking who he is, so before that, he observes that the elders, the older members of the elders of Athens were sitting on lower benches, and the younger members of the elders of Athens were sitting on higher benches. And he has a dilemma. Right, if he says shalom, right, hello to the elder ones, he's insulting the younger ones, who clearly must have something special about it because they put them higher up, right? But if you'd say hello to the younger ones first, because they're higher up, because they seem to be occupying higher chairs, he'll be offending the elder ones that ought to be honored because of their being more advanced in years and probably wiser because they're more experience. So there's a dilemma, and it's no question that they set up this dilemma by design for everyone to be faced with. Right? So if I say to them first, they'll kill me. If I say to them first, they'll kill me. So he said, shalom lekulchem. Peace to all of you. Just greeted all of them together to escape that dilemma. And they say, all right, who are you? I'm the wise man of the Jews. Right? And so I want to hear what you have to offer, right? And look, if you best me, you can do with me whatever you want. You can kill me if you want. You do with me whatever you want if you best me in the argument. And if I best you, you come and eat with me on my ship. That was the challenge that he threw down. Right? So to unlock the significance of all of this, because the next session we'll start going into some of the challenges that they threw down. But this ends the prologue to the story of how he got in, but there's deep significance in this also. Like, what does it mean? There are guards not letting anyone in, and special guards not to let anyone out, and how he had to trick them to go in, and the whole thing of how the elders sit on the bottom and the younger ones on top, and you know, and why if he loses, they could kill him if they want, right? But if they lose, the worst thing that'll happen to him is that they eat with him on his boat. There's deep things being alluded to in all these things, and these explanations come from the Maran, his Chidush HaGadol, and he says like this, right? The philosophers held that the wisdom of philosophy, as we said in the last session, takes a man to a whole categorically higher level beyond where the regular man of flesh is. And that's represented by the fact that no man is just allowed to walk in. No. This is like a whole nother level, right? And to walk in here is like saying that a person wants to walk into heaven. You can only walk into heaven if you're dead. You want to come in here, we'll kill you. I.e., it's like, why don't you walk into heaven? You can't walk into heaven unless you die first. It's like a whole superhuman, you know, unearthly level. That's what's represented by the guards not letting anyone in. You know, this is what the message is trying to say. This is like a whole other level. This is like heaven relative to earth. Can't get to heaven, well, you know, unless you're willing to die. Good, right? So that's also, you know, the guards won't let you in, and if you push past them, if you insist on pushing past them, and you'll succeed, they'll kill you, because you can't go to heaven unless you die first. It's all philosophically apropos. Right? It's all philosophically parallel. Right? And the statement that's being made on the other extreme, that, you know, no one who's in is allowed to just stop exiting, as presumably that means, you know, when they're in session, right, and they're philosophizing, you can't leave, because intellect is above the flesh. So when they're in session, no one's allowed to leave, right, because that's called defiling the intellect, because the intellect is above the flesh, and the philosopher clings to the intellect in certain ways, is a superman in a certain way. And, you know, outside of the academy represents the pedestrians, the man in the street, John Q. Public. The mind cannot go down to such a level, right? The mind can only cling to the refined person who's, you know, conquered the flesh. And outside the academy represents, you know, it's the street, it so represents common man, represents the world of flesh, right? The mind can't go down there. That's why they block the mind, you know, that when in session, no one can leave, right? Intellect doesn't go down to the level of flesh. Animals that are pure flesh creatures don't have intellect, right? So the intellect can't go down to the level of the flesh. That's what's represented. The guards that don't let anyone leave. Anyone who insists on leaving while the session, you know, they're in session and the power of intellect is being exhibited, he's defiling the intellect, taking it down to where it can't go. That's why he has to be killed if he really insists on leaving. Right? Don't let him leave, and if he pushes past, and successfully they'll kill him. Right? So, you know, this is what's all being represented. You know, it's the message of guards on the outside, not letting common man in, and guards inside, that the intellect can't go down to the level of the flesh. Right? So what's from Yeshua ben Hananya's amazing statement, right? What's represented, right, that at the corridor, right, he doesn't actually make it in, because otherwise it would have killed him. At the car, he manages to jump into the corridor and he leaves again, but he jumps in with 1 foot, you know, facing inwards and 1 foot facing outwards. Right? He made an amazing statement, which they couldn't argue with. That's what it means, that it was successful, the ploy was successful in getting him in. What it means, what it represents philosophically, is that he made an argument that can't be refuted. That's what it means. Right? That you can't really say that the intellect is categorically beyond flesh, because how does man ever merit the intellect? Man does, you know, at the end of the day, he's a physical creature. So you say he has, in a certain way, he transcends the flesh, but he's still made of flesh. He still has heart and lungs and, you know, and all the limitations of flesh. No matter how much he's refined himself, he still has limitations of flesh. So the intellect must have some relationship to the flesh. But of course, the intellect is beyond flesh, like we said, because animals that are pure flesh don't have intellect whatsoever, right? And a man that never refines himself and acts pretty much like an animal is, we know, quite stupid, right? So So the intellect, there's a duality to it. It's a ways above flesh and ways it connects to the flesh. It's above and connects. And is even true about the Torah. That's even above secular wisdom. Right? And a Talmud Chacham embodies Torah. And it's called his Torah. He embodies Torah. That's why he deserves honor for the Torah that he learned. So there's like a, you know, so there's this dilemma that the intellect's above flesh, and yet the intellect does connect to the flesh. You know, if a person's willing to do what it takes to connect to the intellect. And this is what Yeshua Ben Chaim is showing, that there's a interrelationship, there's a communication, but it's not a real connection. Because the intellect is not within the flesh, because then the intellect would be very limited, and it wouldn't be able to perceive the big and amazing things that it perceives. It would be totally encompassed by the flesh, be surrounded by the flesh, right? So it's a mitzad that has to be beyond the flesh. But, you know, a flesh person is the one who's carrying the intellect on top of him. So he's saying there's, you know, the relationship between the intellect and the flesh is like one foot in, one foot out. That to a certain extent, you know, it's not a total connection. It's just it's like a symbiosis. It's a two-way street. It's a two-way street. You know, the body moves towards the intellect and trying to be a little bit more than what it really is by refining yourself and trying to conquer your baser instincts. And the intellect also makes a step towards man, you know, to emanate towards man. And this all happens at the portal, in a meeting place, a neutral zone, that the flesh could be a little bit more in order to be able to receive influence from the intellect. And that's what we say also, Lahavdil, even in Torah knowledge it's that way. We say that the aspect called Neshama is the aspect that understands Torah. The aspect is Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama. The Nefesh is totally in the body, but that's not the aspect that understands Torah. The Ruach, which is the power of speech, is part in, part out. The part that's called Neshama is beyond the body, but it sends communication to the mind. Unishmas shakai tibirem. Understanding comes from the neshama, the pasuk says in Iyov. Right? The Nefesh Chaim writes about this at great length. So he's making say, you know, what is exactly the relationship? This, you know, there's this dilemma. What is the relationship to the intellect of the flesh? Well, it's a two-way street. The body could refine itself to be a little bit more so as to receive influence and communication from the intellect. That's the one foot in and the one foot out. You know, the two-way street, which is at the portal, neutral ground, the body could push itself a little bit further so as to receive influence from the intellect. He solved the quandary and said a very clear definition of the relationship between man and intellect, right? And with that, he broke the barriers between man and intellect, because he defined the interrelationship between the two. And that's what it means. With this, they got rid of the guards, they got rid of the barriers, was able to go in, because he correctly identified and defined the relationship that there is between body and intellect. It's a two-way street. The body tries to be a little bit more, then, you know, get beyond itself a little bit, as intellect communicates with it. And, you know, and because he defined that relationship, he do away with the barriers, and he's able to make it in. And it's all, you know, there's tremendous philosophical depth, everything's happening over here. He defined the relationship between man and intellect, and that did away with the barriers, and now he's in. Now, the fact that the younger ones are on top, and the older ones are on the bottom. Well, young thinkers could understand, you know, things that are plainly obvious, you know, physical world things, like they quickly understand whatever could be observed in a telescope, be observed in a microscope, and politics and everything, yeah. And, you know, only when you're older, you get better at abstract thinking, and you extrapolate to what's invisible. But what's dominant? What's dominant? Like, what's, like, common to every man, number one? Considered to be the strongest perceptions that you have, because they could be backed up with empirical evidence. And what's, you know, most meaningful to a person in his life is those things that can be physically measured. The physical sciences, politics, commerce, all the things that are tangible, you know, so what you understand about them are considered to be true and not theory. It's fact, because it could be measured, it could be proven, it could be shown. And also these things make the most difference, because you've got to live, you've got to survive, you've got to run a nation, yeah, right? So all these things are considered to be primary. primary. A, they could be proven empirically, and B, they're primary, and it's also primary that you come to these ideas first. So it's like considered to be like ground floor that stands firm. And then there's the higher floor of when you're older, you reach the abstract. So they're saying a tremendous statement, the Greeks, by these Athens, these people, the elders of Athens, right? That what the younger philosophers understand is primary, right? And what the olders understand, it's just an addition. So you can't, the addition can't be more important than the primary. The primary is the base, right? So that's why I put the younger ones on top, right? There's a certain statement with that, right? A certain statement to that, And also, putting the younger ones on top and the older ones on the bottom also, says the Maharal, creates a certain unity. Because if they would leave the younger ones on the bottom and the older ones on top, that would, accentuate the difference between them. So, like this, everyone has something over you. They have the abstract thought and the dignity of being older. Dignity of a person deserves because he's older and because he's married. They have that. And they have the fact that they have the higher position. Everyone has something over the other, and that's what makes a total unity between them, right? And Rabbi Shua ben Charanya, he understands all of this, and that's the message, right? That each one has a unique mila, right? And that's what puts them really equal. They have the unique mila of the abstract, and they have the unique mila of understanding what's primary, right? And the message is that both are necessary, and that's why to bring up the message, Dafka put the younger ones on top. Right, and it won't detract from the honor of the young, because the elders have their honor innate, to their being older people, right? So it doesn't detract from the honor they carry with them just because they're older, right? So everyone has a mile, and he understands he zeroes in. He sees the statement that they're trying to make. He shows that he saw the statement, and he says a general hello to everybody. All right. I see the statement you're making. Everything is important. It's all important. This has not been prime. This has not been. So hello to all of you. He's showing them that he understood their message. Right. So then, lastly, when the terms of the challenge are laid down, that already leads to the difference between Torah and secular knowledge. Is that if you win me, right, you kill me, but if I beat you, you eat by me. So Maharal says this really shows already the difference between Torah and secular knowledge. A person who's into science only, science and philosophy, so we know that these people don't have much fear of heaven and they don't take Torah seriously. The secular mind negates the Torah mind. Right? They say, Mom, no different than a person who's into physical desires, he's not going to be an intellectual. Right? The power of the body negates the mind. The power of the secular mind also negates the Torah mind. The secular mind relative to Torah mind is the difference between body and soul. Because the secular mind just measures the physical world. Right? And Torah is the wisdom from God. It's from above. So too much secular knowledge negates Torah knowledge. Right? The secular mentality negates the Torah mentality. Right? So he says, if you win me, i.e. the secular mind wins the Torah mind, you kill me. Because the secular mind negates the Torah mind. But the Torah mind doesn't negate the secular mind. Because hafachba the kula b'damish says in Avis, all wisdoms are within the Torah. Torah is the higher mind that encompasses everything that's the lower mind has to offer also. It's above, so it encompasses everything. Right? And just when you have the Torah mind, you see how Torah is actually the center. And it branches out to the secular wisdoms also, and all the secular wisdoms come back to the Torah. Like Chazal say, Istako Baris Abraham, if God looked into the Torah, from the Torah, created the whole world. So everything that secular knowledge, measures and observes, is all comes from the Torah. Torah is above. So if you only see the lower, you'll never see the higher. But from the higher perspective, you see the lower also. Right? So if you're looking from above, you see everything below also. Right, but if you're looking from below, you only see from this point downwards, you don't see what's above you. Right, so secular knowledge negates, secular mind negates the Torah mind, but the Torah mind includes the secular mind. So if I win you, I don't negate you. You become incorporated within me. And not only that, if I win you, you not only are you not negated, you become incorporated within me, but you see that really Torah is the source of secular knowledge. That all not all branches of knowledge branched out from the Torah. But if you only look at the branches, you miss the tree that it branched out from. But if you see the tree, you could see the branches also, right? And you see that the branches come from the tree. Let's say if I win and a supremacy of Torah knowledge emerges, you're not going to be negated. You'll be incorporated within me, and you'll see that you come from me. You're sustained by it. So it means you'll come to me and you'll eat by me. Because that's the relationship that the secular wisdoms have to the Torah. They come from Torah, and they're supported by the Torah. Meaning, I will support you, right? You will be nizar, and you will get your sustenance from it, because that's all secular wisdom is sustained by the Torah. Torah, you know, is the, you know, it's in a league onto its own, but it also is the point from which the secular knowledges and the whole reality branched out from. And if I win, that's what becomes revealed. So you don't get negated, but you come to eat by me and be sustained by me, and you understand the real relationship that there is between Torah and secular knowledge, that Torah includes all of secular knowledge, the way the tree includes and sustains all its branches.